Good morning. My name's Paul Tolley, and it's my pleasure, as always, to welcome Mayor Sam Copeland to the studio for our monthly talk about Armidale and matters local government, I guess.
Indeed. Look, it's great to be back, Paul. Plenty to talk about.
A small one to start, just for curiosity. Did Armidale Council get hit by the CloudStrike outage?
Yes, we did. I'm not sure what the impact was. I think we were back online fairly quickly, but from a community point of view, our phone system was down.
So like many organisations, IT boffins are going to be having a quick look at things and seeing what they can do
to
mitigate anything in the future. To start with a good news story, I've just discovered that Armidale Regional Council won a medal at the Australian Council of Local Government. I didn't even know there was such a thing.
No. So I think there's 570-odd councils in Australia, and there was an awards night in Canberra, which tied in with an Australian Local Government Association meeting that we were down there for, and we put in for two awards. The first one was the Career Starter for our Girls in Civil program, and the second one was Women in Leadership. And we won the Career Starter award up against, 500-plus other councils, which was a great result, and we were highly commended for the Women in Leadership. So I was fortunate to go up with Annie Harris, our head of HR, for want of a better term. It's probably people and culture, but head of HR, and we accepted the award from the Prime Minister and Christy McBain. This is in the Great Hall in Parliament House, a big dinner on there. And as we, shook hands and walked off, they then read out the highly commendeds for a couple of other awards, and we're halfway down the hall, and our name popped up again. It was great.
So from an internal or organisational perspective, what does this mean? Does it mean that systems within council are working well, or that agendas and goals are well in place?
What it really means, that council's been going through since the new general manager, he's been there 3 years now, since the general manager, James Roncon, came in, he started a really intense cultural change program. And this is one of these tangible results of the cultural change, where we are better connected with the community, we're better responders, we're a great place to work. I mean, you can say you're a great place to work and you can say you've got a great culture, but it's not until you start actually
getting the proof.
Well, actually, one of our examples that wasn't in this, but where our systems are really good, is that we won a risk management award. So
And I both have an interest in that. We discussed that.
Indeed. So, Armidale Regional Council is now seen by peers and external bodies as a really well-run council.
And these things not only make an organisation a good place to work, but they motivate and encourage and help drive staff behaviour and things like that, don't they?
Well, that's right. Success breeds success, and similarly, when things aren't going well, it snowballs in the wrong way.
I'm interested in the nuts and bolts of democracy and governance.
Yes.
I think more of this actually should be taught in schools and civic classes, because I'm a great believer that well-functioning democracies need an educated population. But our local government elections are approaching in September, and under the Local Government Act, all current councillors and mayors elected by the councillors cease to hold their civic positions on the 14th of September, which means that council will be without a governing body from 14th September, maybe until the declaration of the election on perhaps 30th. Do we have a caretaker period similar to the one at federal level? And what happens if an important action or decision is required?
So we do go into a caretaker period. So the council election is on the 14th of September. We go into caretaker period on the 16th of August. So there's a 4-week caretaker period. The councillors still hold their roles in that. Then I am still the mayor up until the election day, and will be doing my normal mayoral duties, and I'll be running around. I'll still be very visible. But council can't make big decisions. So that the council meeting we had on Wednesday night was the last ordinary council meeting for the year, for this term of council.
So is there a delegation for that?
Yeah, there is. So that there was the first order of business at the council meeting was that the roles and functions of the mayor and councillors are delegated to the general manager between election day on the 14th of September until the mayoral election, which is likely to be 7th or 8th of October. And then so it'll be a 3-week period that the general manager, you know, has all the levers at
hands
his disposal.
Hands-off levers. Yeah. And there are two types of mayoral election in Australia, aren't there? One is where the councillors elect their mayor and the other is where citizens elect the mayor as well. So at federal level, obviously, parties like to suggest that people elect the prime minister, but in fact they don't.
No. No. And it's fair to say that, we've seen federally that the community doesn't reject the prime minister. The party's been very good at knifing
in the last few years.
Haven't we? I heard Albanese was saying he's hoping to be the first prime minister returned since John Howard.
Yes,
returned after an election.
When you put it that way, it's extraordinary.
It is, isn't it?
It's a bit of an indictment, isn't it?
It's not good. That means back till what Rudd came in 2007, so Howard's last election must have been 2006, was it, or four or something?
4 or 6, around that time.
So 20 years, we haven't had a prime minister.
I think the takeaway from that is really that the people haven't endorsed the decisions of the parties in power.
Mm, yeah, fair call. It's interesting, isn't it?
Very interesting. Armidale Regional Council has endorsed a draft local housing strategy for public exhibition. Mm. So people can go and have a look at this, provide commentary in the normal way that they can for things that are put on display. But the aim is to create 4,000 new homes. Now, as someone who's recently had problems trying to find tradesmen to do work in two entirely different areas, I'm a little sceptical. And everyone I spoke to seeking tradies had a full jobs book. Are you confident that we can build 4,000 homes in that time?
Yeah, look, it's not, and it should never be that housing strategy to that nitty gritty level. I mean, and not trying to disparage you here, Paul, but why not? As you've opened it up, we have world class problem identifiers in this region. So what we need, and it's not the tradies that this is really geared towards, this housing strategy. It's the developers, so the people to develop lots of land, build a house.
They still need to employ the tradies and the builders, don't they?
Yeah, let's not get hung up on all the reasons why something can't work. This is a mindset shift that I think not just our region but the country needs to make. We start needing to think how and why, not here's a problem. You know, we don't need to work through the 35 problems why something will never happen. So we have two developers with 600 lots potentially ready to go, but they need this housing strategy to be endorsed before that could even remotely happen. So the housing strategy has identified up to 8,000 building lots. It's the public exhibition. So it went on public exhibition over a month ago. The exhibition period closed on Wednesday, and so we'll get a bit more. We'll get that community feedback. It's very likely we will have an extraordinary council meeting in the next 2 weeks to endorse it, and we're off to the races. So that housing strategy, as I said, identified potentially 8,800 lots of at least 700 square metres throughout the LGA, predominantly in Armidale, but also a chunk in Gyra and the villages as well. And the areas that I identified for rezoning were really around where the logical extension to our water and sewerage network is, all those trunk works. They had to, can't be too steep, can't be bushfire prone, can't have koala habitat issues, can't be flood prone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So by providing certainty, that means that the developers will then acquire lots, put the roads in,
the infrastructure.
The infrastructure. And, coming back, we can't get a plumber. Well, the developers actually have their own teams. that do this sort of thing.
And in my defence, shall I say that I wasn't being negative. I was really going to back to what we were just discussing, coming from a risk management perspective.
Yeah.
And looking at it in that perspective that council does, of course, with everything, every decision it makes.
It does. So sort of tied into this, and there's a classic example was in the most recent council meeting. There's a development at Kurrawatha, which for your older listeners is near the old berry patch or across the road from the Negs riding school on the way out to the airport. And under the previous lack of a housing strategy, the minimum lot size out there was between 1 and 4 hectares. So it's land that, you know, where all the logical extensions of water, sewerage, roads, power can easily happen, but they had to be big blocks, and that's not great for a city that needs to grow. That leads to
or
sprawl.
Or a country with a housing shortage.
That's right. So we, because our current rating, current rate category, housing categories couldn't be adjusted, we had to go to the Department of Planning for a gateway determination for them to say, yes, in this special instance, even though it's against your housing strategy, you can do it. And they kept knocking us back. We had a knock on the door 4 times. It wasn't until we had this draft policy that they said, yes, all right, in this instance.
And so they wanted the metal level.
They wanted the smaller one. So we now got it through. So those blocks will be between, I think, now 4,000 and up to 1 hectare, or 4,000 and 6,000 square metres. So now that once the housing strategy is endorsed, all of these problems evaporate.
A couple more questions on the topic. Will there be any low-cost housing options? Does council have a policy with developers for that?
No.
All right. No. First question. Second one. We live in an area with hot summers and cold winters, and probably summers getting hotter. We need housing that's well insulated, well positioned on the block to reduce energy and other costs. And I've always compared having a house and wondered why people in the past haven't looked at the cost of running the house. They do when they buy a car.
Yeah.
But they may buy a house which is very expensive to heat and cool and manage. Does council have any policies in those areas? I know there are statewide policies.
Yeah, we do. I don't know how much they differ from the state. I'm not the planning expert here, but I know that we do have certain standards there, particularly around insulation and heating for new builds. This is with a view to making sure, certainly in the city, that we're not adding to the wood smoke.
Yeah, and this
challenge.
This is important for Armidale. We have a particular climate, don't we?
Mm.
So I'm going to take you back to one we've talked about on and off. The friend, and I'm going to read a little because I've been doing the Friends of the New England Rail Trail, call themselves NERT, are holding their first public meeting in Armidale next Wednesday and then another in Gara on the 14th. And I've seen and heard some differing statements with different facts, and around when there's a lot of passion around things, and you may not like it to be so, but there still is, as we know, around the rail trail. So can you clarify a couple of points for me, particularly around the funding? My understanding is that a group were formed around 10 years ago called New England Rail Trail Inc. My understanding was that group raised $48,000 through crowdfunding and worked with the Department of Regional Development to prepare a business case for the local rail trail project. And now for current project funding, Armidale Regional Council and Glen Innes 7 councils then submitted that funding application to the Bushfire Recovery Scheme, which included NERT Inc., the NERT Inc. business case in that application. Is that basically the way it went, that there was a crowdfunding for an organisation? Maybe this is not even your area. But
I am not sure about all of those specifics. I know that it was the bushfire recovery funding, which was to re-enliven communities.
Was that applied for by council?
Yes.
So that's separate from, because people are making claims of we did this, we did that, we started, we motivated, whatever. And I was just really interested in trying to get accurate information. So who holds the funds to build the trail? Is that council? Will it be a totally council-led project?
Yes. Yes.
All right. So that's where we are at the moment. So what I seem to have found out is that Friends of the Rail Trail are a new and different group from New England Rail Trail Inc. who got the original funding. I'm not sure whether it's just a name change or they're two entirely separate organisations, but I guess people like to claim or disclaim responsibility for various things in that one. We can do a bit more research on this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's community groups. I don't know who's doing what. As far as I'm aware, that there are members of both. Sorry, there's commonality in terms of the membership.
All right, we'll leave it there. Let's keep people updated on the Weeds Authority saga, which broke publicly, I guess, a couple of months ago.
You did. It was your scoop.
Notice. So there's agreement that the New England Weeds Authority be dissolved, and that's probably going to take place sometime November this year, that the general manager of council will develop a working agreement and arrangement for future service delivery, which will include consideration of a new entity and perhaps a new model. Can you speak to that a little? Because it's an important role. The fact that the organisation's fallen over is one thing, but we need a continuity of the work they did.
Yeah, we do. Unfortunately, it's fallen over come into winter, so there's not as many weeds to spray. But look, I shouldn't make quips like that.
No, I think that's a very fair comment, actually.
As we have, as we've discussed since this came to light, and you heard the rumblings before the appointment of the administrator, but once the administrator was appointed on the 17th of May, in my conversations with the administrator, and I've seen the reports where he's been able to be far more open about everything, this is a massive, massive failure of management and governance. There's
corporate responsibility, can I add?
There is absolutely no getting away from that. It's not one single person. This is a massive failure. If this were in the corporate world, directors would be in a world of hurt. And actually, we had a speaker at the Have Your Say at the recent council meeting from probably the largest creditor. Actually, it's all public, so I might as well say it, from Rice Constructions, who are owed in the order of $400,000. And this fellow was saying, quite rightly, if this were in the business world, directors, you could be up for serious penalties.
Directors would be in court.
They would be. Because the organisation was clearly trading whilst insolvent. Mm. And, the Nuremberg defence is not, doesn't apply in these sorts of areas. So this has been a massive failure. It's fortunate to an extent that the Weeds Authority has four, in inverted commas, shareholders, being the councils, who are the financial backstop, who will bail everything out.
Perhaps through gritted teeth.
Yeah, sort of reluctantly. If you can't unscramble the omelette.
No.
However, this is something where they could have thrown their hands up 6-12 months earlier and said, there is no way out of this, rather than keep trudging on. Be that as it may, we are where we are, and the administrator's recommendation is that the Weeds Authority be dissolved for two reasons. He had a financial expert come in, model various scenarios. No matter which way you sliced and diced it, it was never going to be able to wash its face. It was always financially going to go backwards going forward. So there's that. So financially it wasn't sustainable, but also from a reputational point of view, not just within the wider community, but potential funding bodies, Department of Primary Industries and local land services were just, there's no way it could be...
Didn't want to touch it.
No. It wouldn't get a spit polish, which is a real shame for, there are some very dedicated people who work there.
And perhaps they can be incorporated in the new model.
So the administrator's recommendation is that the Weeds Authority be dissolved. He has also asked the councils, and this is sort of public enough knowledge that I'm happy to say it, because Armidale has already provisioned $500,000 that we'll have to kick in to make sure that everything's okay, that be sorted out in the next couple of weeks. So we will likely, I'm not sure what the final invoice in inverted commas will be, but I'm envisaging it'd be somewhere between $350,000 and $500,000. The other councils will have a proportion as well. So I know all the other councils have provisioned up to $250,000. So all up, there was $1.25 million that the combined four councils had said, well, this is, we're prepared for this to be called upon. So in good news, the creditors and the staff and everyone are going to be sorted in due course. Then we have to look about, so part of that funding, I guess, will be to keep the organisation going as required for the service delivery, at the same time as working on alternates. So the general managers of the four councils are going to look at a number of different options. One is the lead council model, where one council will effectively do all of the management, you know, the finance, the HR.
And logically that would be Armidale, wouldn't it, being the biggest one?
Everyone looks to Armidale being the biggest council to do it. I think the council that complains the most should be the one that does it. I don't know who that is. But everyone looks at, will look at Armidale to do it, partly because of our geography, but large, because we're the largest council and we're...
And central
and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm a little reluctant that we take on that role because, you know, it's all of the downside, none of the upside. But in any event, or alternatively, the lead council could change every 3 years or something.
Which might be a useful model because all councils may discover the trials and tribulations of being lead council.
Yeah, that's right. But really, the lead council provides the management of the, would provide the management of the organisation, and it would save a lot of duplication. And systems and things like that. So it could, you know, save $200,000, which in the case of the Weeds Authority is material. So you'd have the lead council doing all the management, grant applications, et cetera, and then you'd probably have a spray rig in each of the council areas and an operator.
Another one, there's a suggestion or consideration that the board be suspended for a further 3 months from 17th of August, and that would then imply that the interim administrator be extended, but that's all going to happen around this council
caretaker period. Yeah. That's why the vote at the council meeting on Wednesday was to endorse the administrator to stay for an extra 3 months because his term would finish 17th of August, right at the start of the caretaker period. Mm. So once he's got the endorsement from all four councils, and I believe Walker are having their meeting next week, Armidale, Urala and Glen have all voted for that. Walker, I imagine, it's formality. Then the administrator writes to the Minister for Local Government seeking a three-month extension.
And then things aren't interrupted by the...
Then things aren't interrupted. It just rolls on. He wants the councils to tip in the cash prior to going into the administration period, the caretaker period. So by the time the new council is sworn in say, the first week of October, there's a solution ready to go.
Okay. And that's a really full and fine explanation.
It is.
Appreciate that because it's an important role in a regional area.
Yeah, very, very important. And look, at the end of it, we'll end up with a better model. Albeit at some cost. You know, if you were the optimist, you'd say, well, you know, an organisation can never just run on the, you know, the smell of an oily rag, so maybe the councils would have had to, you know, if they were serious, they should have been chipping in an extra $100,000 each every year for, you know, going back, so.
Well, thank you. Here's a couple of smaller ones. I see the council might be reopening the Link Road junction with the highway.
Nah, that was a resolution of council a while ago, and so what you would have seen in that paper, yes, it makes sense. Yes, it would require a bit more thinking because where Link Road is, that's part of our northern expansion plans per the housing strategy. Yes. It would probably require another big roundabout, which will cost many millions of dollars.
Would that be a council expense or a state roads expense?
It'd be a council expense, I'd say. So the idea is just to keep exploring that. So the item that went up was more of a watching brief.
All right. Kempsey Road upgrade cost... bit of a cost blowout, is that right? Is there a problem with that?
No, it's not a cost.
Taking forever.
Oh, Kempsey Road is a massive project, the biggest project any council has ever taken on, ever.
Really?
Anywhere.
All right.
So
state.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, the possible exception might be with
something in the snowy area.
No, that's not a council thing. The Lismore floods, I'm not sure if the council was the lead reconstructor of Lismore. But in any event, there's a funding application in for an extra $200,000-odd. So maybe $220,000. That'll take the total cost of Kempsey Road to $630 million.
And this may be important because you've mentioned the Oven Mountain pumped hydro storage scheme during our interviews, and it looks as though it's becoming closer to being a reality. And if it does, then the Kempsey Road is the access, isn't it?
It is. Look, at the council meeting, there were, I think, about 34 or 5 items when we include closed session. And one of the real gems in the most recent council meeting was a planning agreement with the Oven Mountain Pumped Hydro Scheme of $600,000 per annum, indexed from 2023.
Coming to council
for the life of the project. So a pumped hydro scheme will probably last 50-plus years. So this will be a $30 million injection to our future fund. That is huge. Conditional on that was that we work with the Oven Mountain group to around that Kempsey Road access.
Yeah. Okay. I was tying those two.
Yeah, they are. And they are tied in. In fact, that was the resolution. Yep, we'll give you. And the $600,000 is about 4 times as much as what they originally thought we should get.
Now, here's a small one, and I know it's these things are decided upon by visual design and branding experts, but council on their website and a lot of their emails use a pale lime green with white print on it. I know, and others have commented, I've talked with this to others, it's actually very hard to read, and I'm going to suggest that somebody in that department may get in front of their own screen if they haven't, they may have, and have a look at it, because for a lot of people that pale green background to white print is difficult. Just a small thing, but
there you go.
Putting it on the record. Water storage 96.7%. So the level one's been reduced slightly, which I guess is good news because you did tell us on this show that council had reassessed water levels in light of changes to climate and rainfall patterns.
Yeah, it really came about September last year when we went. September, October last year when we went into, we decided to change the drought management strategy to the easy bits and increase when we went into level one from 80% to 90%. Mm-hmm. And so we dropped below 90% fairly quickly. But level one restrictions don't come off until it gets to 95%. Otherwise, we'd be on off as it goes up and down.
No, so that's good news.
It is good news.
I'm going to take you back briefly to one that we discussed quite a long time ago, the gasworks site remediation, because our council is required or nominated as the polluter. This is getting closer?
I don't know how close it really is getting, to be honest. So at the recent council meeting, there was a vote to have an environmental auditor on site for a 3-year period to make sure everything's ticked off. So one can only presume from that some work is going to progress. Another vote was in that same precinct, the suspension bridge that was damaged in flooding. So an old wooden suspension bridge. It's just
back at the swimming pool.
Back at the swimming pool. We're going to be spending $700,000-odd to replace that with a heritage style wooden suspension bridge. So that's going to crack on. And that was a bit of a battle between engineering and planning. Planning said, well, it has to be heritage. Engineering's going, yeah, what you want will only last 30 years. How about we do a steel and concrete one? It'll last 150 years and cost you less, but planning won.
Well, people like myself who live in a heritage streetscape area are aware that of the problems that this can bring with the house, and council's got to face them as well. That's my view on that.
Yes. Oh, well, council is facing it, so it's going to cost us a lot more money to provide a bridge across the creek.
And it's used a lot by TAFE students, actually.
Well, it was.
Traditionally, and it was always visually a nice amenity.
It is a nice amenity. And look, when, you know, in the fullness of time, the swimming pool gets done up, that might be a nicer entrance and rah, rah, rah.
Yeah, and perhaps at the same time, more money might be spent to a slight improvement to the car park area there.
Yeah.
Final one. Council has decided to exclusively acknowledge Annawan people as the, and this is in for welcomes to country and acknowledgement of country. Mm. I suspect that Kambanji people will not be overly delighted with this. Do you, and you may not, but I don't know, do you have any understanding of why that decision was made or what people were consulted around that decision?
This came up, I think, back in May last year. Councillor Widders put forward a motion to erect signs around the Armidale LGA, acknowledging three different mobs that excluded the Gumbanya. That motion didn't get up after a bit of suggestion, and a working group was formed. That working group landed on, and this was a motion that was put forward in about September, again by Councillor Widders, that on the town boundaries, the Armidale town boundaries, Armidale is acknowledged as sitting on Annawan land.
As opposed to the larger LGA.
Yes. Also in that motion was that, and it wasn't hugely specific, but it was that welcome to country acknowledge within anything done within the Armidale LGA, sorry, in the Armidale city limits or town limits.
Be connected by Annawan people.
Well, no, acknowledges its Annawan land.
All right. Now, I think they also wanted that a welcome to country be conducted by Annawan.
Yeah, so I'll get to that. All right. So the council staff said, all right, well, if this is the motion's been passed, it's not consistent with our current guidelines and rules. So a motion that went up at this council meeting was to put on public exhibition. There were two bullet points there, some adjustments to our recognitions policy. And it was to make the signs possible and this acknowledgement possible. So the logic, the sequence is, well, if we've said on the town boundaries that Armidale City sits on Annawan land, then if we're having welcome to country, that needs to acknowledge the Annawan people. And because it's a welcome, that needs to be done by an Annawan person. If it's an acknowledgement of country, that can be done by anyone. That can be a Gumbanya.
You and I can do that.
You and I can do that. But we have to acknowledge the Annawan, that Armidale sits on, you know, the homes of the Annawan people. It's not specific what has to be said, but that's the flavour. So I must admit, when I saw this, I thought this is too specific and rah, rah, rah. But once you distinguish between a welcome and an acknowledgement, it kind of makes sense. You and I can't welcome someone to Annawan land. We can acknowledge Annawan land. So that's the tweaks of this policy is going up on public exhibition, probably went up yesterday, and we'll be there for 28 days at least to get the feedback. I imagine we will get a lot of feedback.
I think that'll be interesting.
And then it'll be up to the new council to decide what they do. So, yeah, this is picking up something that happened. This is picking up a motion from last year and making it possible. And you're right, it is contentious.
Well, and the final question for the day is, does council need to look at these formalities for the wider LGA outside of...
Council doesn't need to do anything, but the idea is that we will or could. So, you know, one option that was mooted was at the LGA boundary because, you know, the Armidale Regional Council LGA boundary is a man-made one.
It's a construct.
Yeah, it's a construct. Where the different Aboriginal nations sat is, you know, isn't consistent with the construct of an LGA boundary. So what one option would have been at the entrance to, you know, the main entrances to the Armidale LGA, we could have had a sign saying, Armidale Regional Council area sits on the lands of the, and list every mob. So without being specific, the feedback was, well, it's nice, but it's not, it's a bit too general. So, look, it's contentious. Every other council has squibbed this. they've thought it's a good idea until they had to do something.
And that's absolutely true. And, you know, pat on the back to Armidale Council for actually looking at it and biting the bullet, because too often councils, as you and I know,
yeah. I mean, that's the easy thing to do is go, it's all too hard, put our fingers in the ears and go, la, 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 la. And I have to be honest, it is hard. I do feel for the Gumbungya people. I know a number of them. They're good people, and you just hate. I really hate seeing people distressed.
Because in a way, it appears like picking winners and losers, and no one likes doing that. It's wonderful to talk to you again, Sam. You're always very forthcoming and forthright, and we appreciate that enormously, because it, in my view, helps to keep people engaged with what council is doing and to feel some ownership of the bigger picture and the bigger plan for Armidale. So thank you very much for coming in. I've been talking with Mayor Sam Copeland, and I guess we'll do this again in a month.
Well, we may not, because there won't be another meeting. There will be a council election. I may not get elected to council, and I may not be the mayor. So this could be our last one, Paul.
Well, let's see what happens. But you may have your special meeting coming up. But whoever follows after the election can talk to me about that.
Brilliant.
Thanks very much. Thank you.